Okay, good moed, everyone. It's Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And the concept of Chol HaMoed is very much less understood than we'd like it to be. It's a mysterious period of time. It's kind of Yontif, but not Yontif, the Moed, but not the Moed, as maybe the name itself kind of indicates. And it's maybe too little known of a fact that not everything is mutter on Chol HaMoed, that Chol HaMoed has prohibitions of malacha, and the nature of that prohibition is actually a big mystery. And it happens to intertwine with some topics we've been talking about over the past few weeks, where we have considered the impact of Chazal on mitzvos in general and mitzvos min haTorah. So here, in the context of Chol HaMoed, is the clearest reference in the Gemara to a unusual concept where we find the power of Chazal coming up in a whole new way, or what seems like a whole new way. And this idea appears in the Gemara in a few places, but it's certainly most prominent in the context of Chol HaMoed. And as we'll discuss in the Rishonim and in the Achronim, it can be found many more times. But among the two references or so that you find in Shas, this is by far the most well-known. So really the home base of this topic that we're going to talk about a bit, rabbinic power and its influence on Dinim D'oraisa, is really primarily located in this question, the prohibition of malacha on Chol HaMoed. So let's start off with this question. The fact that there is some prohibition of malacha on Chol HaMoed, even though it certainly manifests itself very differently than the prohibition that we have on Shabbos and on Yontif. Shabbos and Yontif are not exactly the same, but they're pretty similar. The major difference is that on Yontif we have a heter ochel nefesh, that what is necessary for Simchas Yontif is kind of carved out of the Isra Malacha. So on Shabbos we have across the board prohibition of Malacha, and it doesn't matter why we would want to do the Malacha, it's prohibited across the board. But on Yontif, so we have a notion of Ochel Nefesh. And the Rishonim and the Achronim have different understandings of how that works. According to the Ramban in his commentary to Chumash, it means that the Torah specifically prohibited on Yontif a different formulation than with Shabbos. That on Yontif is a prohibition not of all malacha, but of malachas avoda. And the malacha that we would do to enjoy Yontif is simply not included in the first place in the prohibition. And others understood it a little differently. Shagasari has an essay about this, that essentially the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif comes and offsets some of the prohibitions, and we have a whole tradition as to when and where this applies. But that carved out of the prohibition of malacha, there is the heter ochel nefesh, and within certain limitations, that which is necessary for enjoying yontif becomes mutter within a framework of a larger prohibition of malacha. When it comes to Chol HaMoed, so it's a very different framework, that we certainly have much wider latitude to do many more things than we can do on yontif itself. So we're interacting on Zoom right now, and we drive around in cars, and we speak on telephones. But there are malachos that are prohibited, and there are many parameters as to when and if we can allow various malachos. So, first off, what is the nature of this prohibition? Is this prohibition d'oraisa? Is it d'rabbanan? So, what's your impression so far about that question?
It seemed to be d'rabbanan, based okay.
That's something we want to explore. Like you say, it seems to be d'rabbanan. So what you're saying is the way a lot of Rishonim relate to it, that there's a feeling of d'rabbananness to it. Right? You say right, it seems.
Originally, the Gemara said that there are two Tanaim who said that it was d'oraita, I think.
Well, we say it's derais mean because they look to psukim. Is that what you mean?
I guess. I mean, I thought that my impression based on the initial reading Gemara was that it was deraita, and I think Tosfot said really it was an asmachta, and so it was like more than just a normal derabanan. So it was like relative to other laws, it was deraita, but it's not really deraita.
So a lot of the words you're using are essentially reflecting feelings that are in the Rishonim also, because you say your impression is. And yeah, that's the impression one certainly gets from the Gemara bringing Psukim to tell us that there's a prohibition of Malacha. But then also, like I said before, it seems Drabanan, because the nature of the Heterim that we have, which include Davar Ha'avad, that if something is going to lead to a great loss, if there's going to be a Hefsid Meruba, so that's not the kind of Heter we normally find by Dinim Daraisa. So, your language is kind of meduyuk before it seems drabanan. It seems the good impression from the Gemara is deraisa, and yet seems drabanan. So it's unclear, right? So we have this confusion in how we relate to Malachas Chol HaMoed, and the Gemara perhaps addresses that by introducing this phrase over there in Chagiga and Daf Yud Ches that Masr Hakasuv L'Chachamim. That the Torah handed something over to the rabbis to determine what's what, essentially. That the rules and the parameters were established by the rabbis with the authority of the Torah, with the space given to them to do so by the Torah. So it sounds like this is a whole new category. We've spoken over the past few weeks about Dinim Daraisa and Dinim Darabanan and Dinim Darabanan overriding Dinim Daraisa. Here it seems like we have a whole new category, that there is something in the middle, that a din which is essentially from the Torah, that's what it sounds like, that the Psukim are telling us, but the rules are established by the rabbis. So you have to put a lot together here because there's a lot that's mysterious. So the Gemara doesn't spell this out, but a number of Rishonim who are more explicit about it, the Rishonim, many of them understand that what the Gemara is getting at is to address essentially Zach's question before, or his Lashon of Seems, which Tosfos was also spelling out a little bit more, that it doesn't feel like a din min haTorah. Right? That it doesn't feel like the rules are consistent with what you would expect for Torah law. So how do you reconcile that with the fact that apparently does come from the Torah? So maybe there is this kind of category that allows for that. That something that is min haTorah, but the rabbis have authority to define how it works, that allows for greater leniency. It allows for greater flexibility. That's what it sounds like the Gemara is saying. That's certainly how Rishonim and the Beis Yosef and others understand it. But it's not explicit like that in the Gemara. It's basically putting together the question the Rishonim ask and how they read the Gemara. Essentially, that's how they emerge. That this unusual kind of formulation allows for greater room for kula. So far, so good? So that idea is interesting. Rashi on Chumash, if you had a chance to see, so Rashi in Parshas Emor, Rashi seems to say that part of the drasha and the pasuk itself seems to allow for the heter of Davar Ovid on Chol HaMoed, which is interesting, and the Ramban asks on him, because it's not something that we necessarily see elsewhere, that the assumption that the Pasuk is telling us specifically the Heter for Malacha within the Isser on Chol HaMoed. So that would seem to take things in a different approach, and the Ramban asks on him is an interesting discussion to be had. But what many understand from here is that the kulas that we have are a function of this idea that Master Hakas of L'Chacham. And the Gemara has this in another place in Bechoris. This is a more obscure reference. But in Rishonim, you have it coming up a number of other times and brought up in a few other contexts. So just to mention a few of them, and there are quite a number. Rav David Cohen has in his Sefer Gvul Yavetz, he has a whole essay, a whole section about Masor HaKasuv L'Chachamim, where he collects a long list of all the different places where it's suggested in the Rishonim and Achronim. But some of the more well-known ones, so we are here, we had Yom Kippur recently, and we're in the middle of Sukkot. So some of the more well-known examples relate to Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So one is the Ran, in the beginning of the 8th parak of Yuma. So the Ran discusses how to relate to what we call Shari Inuyim on Yom Kippur. That we know, we say we have 5 Inuyim on Yom Kippur. Achil and Shti is one of them, and then we have 4 more. So Achil and Shti, we know, is certainly an Isser Daraisa. It's an Isser Karis on Yom Kippur. That's a big deal. What about the other Inuyim, called Shari Inuyim? So here also, you have some tension, because there are exceptions to these Inuyim. So, for example, the Mishnah tells us that a king or a kala, they have permission to wash their face. There are certain exceptions to what's included in, say, that Inuy of bathing. So, the Rishonim have a big machlokas, I guess for similar reasons. It's similar to the whole question of how you relate to Melechas Chol HaMoed. That seems like it's Daraisa, but then the Heterim don't sound like they're Daraisa. So the Ran writes over there, this is an example of Masor HaKasuv L'Chachamim. That the same kind of structure that the Torah didn't spell out what these Inuyim were, and Chazal were given the authority to define them. And that leads to certain kulos. In addition, so what's most relevant to us this week is that it is invoked in the context of the disqualifications of a lulav. Now, there, it's interesting, Bichlal. So we have, if you ever sit down and try to go through it, maybe you have over these past few weeks in preparation for Sukkot, or if you've learned the Sugyas, so the Sugyas and the details of Psulei Lulav and Esrog are very, very complex and are a mixture of different halachos, Dereis and Derabanan, and apply differently in different ways at different times. And it's not clear, since we're dealing with mitzvahs Dereis, at least on the first day, which we didn't have this year, the Shabbos, but since, at least in theory, dealing with a mitzvah Dereis, so how exactly do you find all these psulim in the Torah itself? So are they all psulim on the Torah level, or are they coming from somewhere else? So here we have many, many details to discuss. And in at least 2 places, Rishonim invoke Masor HaKasuv L'Chachamim. Right, so you had a chance to see this, right? Who invokes this among the Rishonim? So you have the Ran, for one. Right, the Ran is talking about the psul of Hadar, or the requirement of Hadar, the lack of which would constitute a psul. So the Ran's comment is a little tricky, but basically what he's talking about is when we have, after the first day of Yontif, so the mitzvah is Midrabanan. And not all the same rules apply. Some rules do and some rules don't. So why is that? So Tosfos discusses this question, and the Ran discusses it differently than Tosfos. And the Ran basically says, if you take a rule like Hadar, right, that the Lulav should be beautiful, or the Esrog should be beautiful. So that has a number of implications. So for one implication is that you can't have a dried out lulav. So a dried out lulav, the assumption here is that's no good for all of Sukkos. But what if you have an esrog that's chaser, that's missing part of it? So there, it sounds like from the Gemara, that only applies on the first day. So why does there, if they're both associated with Hadar, which not all the Rishonim agree with, but if we assume that both of those issues are a issue from the Hadar perspective, why should it be that Yavesh, that applies all of Sukkos, and an incomplete Esrog, that applies only on the first day? Now, parenthetically, we should mention that there are actually three levels of obligation of Lulav and Esrog, just to make this clear. That we have an obligation on the first day of Sukkos. That's the only time the obligation is Min HaTorah, outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And that we didn't have this year because of Shabbos, but that's not our discussion today. But theoretically, the first day, that's the only time we have a mitzvah of Lulav Min HaTorah. The rest, it's Drabanan, but it's two different kinds of Drabanan. It gets a little confusing. That Yontif Sheni Shel Galias, that's a Yontif Drabanan. And just like Pesach, we have a second Seder, so all of the mitzvahs of the first day apply again. So essentially, the second day of Sukkot, the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog is basically the same, but it's a little more kal, just because it's Drabanan instead of Deraisa, because of Yontif Sheni. But once we get into Chol HaMoed, so then the mitzvah of Lulav has many different dinim. And why that should be is interesting. Some explain that it's because it's really coming from somewhere else. That if we assume that this is a rabbinic expansion to say that we have to take the lulav all the days of Sukkos, what din are we expanding? So you might assume we're expanding the din of taking the lulav on the first day of Sukkos. Min HaTorah, it's only the first day. And the rabbis expanded it to all of Sukkos. But it actually seems like that's not the case. That it's actually an expansion of a different din. That Min HaTorah, in the Beis HaMikdash, they took the lulav every day. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that even in Chutz La'aretz, we should do that also, Zeichel HaMikdash. So it seems that the fact that we took a lulav this morning, Chol HaMoed, is not extending the din of lulav the first day of Sukkos. It's extending the din of Mikdash, which maybe that's a different mitzvah with different rules. So somehow we end up with three different categories of the mitzvah of lulav. Day one, Min HaTorah, day two, Drabanan, and the rest of Yantar. So, it seems that Yavesh applies all of Sukkos, while Chaser only applies the first day, and according to some of the Rishonim, they both have the same source, Min HaTorah, of Hadar. So how could the din apply two different ways? So yes, it's true, it's Drabanan, so it's not tied down to the Pasuk 100%, but, as the Ran emphasizes, we normally say that Chazal would pattern their dinim after dinim in HaTorah. So why would they change the rules? Unless there's some basis for it. So there, the Ran has this comment that the psulim here, Masra HaKasav L'Chachamim, the Torah just says Hadar, but doesn't spell out what Hadar means. So Chazal have latitude to define how it should apply. So they applied it differently for different ramifications of Hadar. So this is, the Ran says, Yavesh, that's an absolute zero on the Hadar scale. It has been drained of all Hidr. So therefore, Chazal were machmir, all of Sukkot is no good. But Esrog, that's Chaser. So that's not great, but it still has hidr to it and the rest of it, whatever's left. So therefore, Chazal applied that differently. It wasn't a direct contradiction to the Torah. It was still within the spirit of Hadar. So that they allowed for the later days of Sukkot. Okay, so far so good? It's a somewhat complex comment. The Rush has it differently. The way the Rush has it is that, or it may be related, but it's a different application, that the Rush is talking about whether B'shas Adchak, if you have no other lulav, can you make a bracha on a lulav hayavish? And there the Rush says that on the one hand, a lulav hayavish is no good even b'di'evet. So if it's not Shas Adchak and you took a lulav hayavish, then it's no good at all. But if it's Shas Adchak, if this is the only lulav that you have, then you can make a brach on it. Even though, if you do have another one, it's no good b'di'evet. And why can you make a brach on it? So then again, he says, because all of this is Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim, and the Chachamim set the rules. So, here you have another example of how this is applied. So we'll come back to this point, but we see this coming up in a few places. We see it coming up in the Gemara in the context of Melechus Chol HaMoed and other places in Shas also, and then we have Rishonim invoking it in a few other contexts, many other contexts, just mentioning a few examples, but Inuya Yom HaKippurim, other than Achila and Shtia, and the Psolim of Alulav, and many other places that Rav David Cohen has in his list, and Rav Ashuai says an essay where he goes through a lot of examples. Also, it comes up in a number of other places. There's one place that you can find in the Achronim, the Chassam Sofer has in his comments to Ksubis. So there is a Machlokas Rishonim also, the obligation of ksuba. When a man gets married, he has to provide his wife with a ksuba. So most of the Rishonim assume that that's a din midrabanan, even though there are some sources that are a little confusing as far as that's concerned, and there is a tosis that says ksuba is daraisa. So the Chassam Sofer applies this category there also, and he says that there is a concept of ksuba min haTorah, but Chazal figured out its details, and that's what we mean when we call Ksuba Darabban. Okay, so far so good. So we have a number of examples of this idea throughout the rabbinic literature. So what exactly is the impact of saying this? So to go back to the question that we started, so okay, so but Lamaisa, is Melechus Chol HaMoed, is it Daraisa or Darabban? So this, practically speaking, is a machlokas rishonim. And so if you saw the Tosfos in Chagiga, so Tosfos essentially lands on the idea that it's derabanan. And a number of other rishonim do also. But Tosfos in Avodah Zarah and Daf Chav Beis, Tosfos there brings two deis about this. Is it deraisa or derabanan? And the other Rishonim who argue, so it seems to be a Machlokas HaRishonim. And the Rambam, if you had a chance to see, you got to see the Rambam, so the Rambam's language is a little mysterious. Because the Rambam attaches it to a Pasuk, but also calls it a Divrei Sofrim, and says you get Makas Mardas, which is what we, Rabbinic Malkas, we normally associate with the Din Darabanan. So the Magid Mishnah and many others read the Rambam as saying it's Drabbanan. The Karen Ora, in his commentary to Moed Katan, we'll come back to. So the Karen Ora reads the Rambam to say that it's Daraisa, because of the Rambam's comments in his Perish HaMishnayis to Moed Katan. The Rambam in the Perish Mishnayis there, he talks about it coming Mikabala, which sounds like it means the Talach al-Moshe Misinai. And once you have that, says the Karen Oris, the fact that he says Divrei Sofrim, so I think we've discussed previously, Divrei Sofrim in the Rambam doesn't necessarily mean the Rabbanan. It just means that we need Chazal to help us out one way or another, but it could still be Min HaTorah as far as authority is concerned. So the Karen Oris says that's really what the Rambam means. That it really is Daraisa, but it comes Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So that's why he calls it Divrei Sofrim in Mishneh Torah. But one way or another, so we have a machlokas. If Malachas Chalamoid is a din min haTorah or a din midrabana, and what's the argument about? So it sounds like the Sefer Shechter understood that the issue is, what is the impact of saying something is nimsar l'chachamim? That line in the Gemara in Chagiga, the Masar HaKasav l'chachamim, so what does that mean? Does that mean that, okay, but at the end of the day, it's still Torah law, just the rabbis define it? So that would be the view that it is Daraisa? Or do we say, no, that it's a Darabana? And that's the view of the Rishonim who say it's Darabana. It's interesting here that the Rush and the Ran, who both invoked this in Hilchos Lulav, so if you want to understand their position from other places, so the Ran by Inuya Yom Kippurim, so he understood that to be Daraisa, so it sounds like he's applying it as a Din Min HaTorah. While the Rush, in the beginning of Moed Katan, the Rush says, Malachas Chalamoed is Darabanan. So maybe that's how he understands the Klal. But in any event, seems to be a machlokas rishonim. And this could be relevant to one of the other examples. So the Rambam in Hilchas Avodas Kochavim, so the Rambam talks about the prohibition of B'chukoseim lo seilechu. You're not supposed to follow the ways of the Akum. And the Gemara in Bava Kamma talks about how that includes certain haircuts. But the Gemara has a heta there, which the Rambam quotes, that for somebody who's Makur of Lamalchus, if somebody has particular access and plays a role with that access to the king, so then he is allowed to get haircuts to fit in better. So the Kest of Mishnah raises the question, but it sounds like this is an Isser Daraisu, Chukoseim Lo Seilechu. So how could it be that we should allow it for Makur of Lamalchus? So the Rambam has that implication. The Kesef Mishnah has two answers. One answer says, well, maybe Makur of Lamalchus is Mamish Bikuach Nefesh. That the person who has access to the king, he is really keeping the Jews alive. And therefore, even though it's an Isser Daraisa, we allow it anyway. While the other answer he gives is, maybe this is an example of Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim. That the Chachamim were given the authority to decide how it applies. So Rabbi Chanan, in his commentary to Bava Kamma, Kovid Shirim to Bava Kamma, so he raises the question against the Kesef Mishnah. He says, okay, so maybe it's Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim. But still, why should it be Mutter for Makur of L'Malchus? That means, okay, they figure out what's included and what's not included. But why should that mean that therefore there are Heterim, like Makur of L'Malchus? So Rabbi Chanan has his own approach to this, but what it seems like is that issue here is the question of, essentially, what is the impact of this din? Once you say that Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim, is it still Daraisa at the end of the day, and therefore should still apply with a certain Chumrah? Or should we say, no, that L'maisa it's a Darabanan, and therefore, the kulos that are associated with Dinam Darabanan would apply here too. Zach?
I don't understand Rav Elchanan's kasha, because if it's Masrana Katubs, then the rabbis can say, can set the parameters however they want. Like, what's the issue of having leniency?
Okay, so let's expand on this a little further. So I think to address that point and to take it to the next step, this question of is it Dereis or is it Derabanan, what is behind that question? Now let's take it to the next level. All right, so why would it be one or the other? So perhaps the issue is, how do you understand the phrase Masra Kasa Lachama? What do the words mean? So we could understand it in two ways, I think. One way is to say that this is indeed, like we indicated at the beginning, a new category, different than anything we've spoken about in our conversations over the past few weeks. So a whole new idea. Masar akasav l'chacham. That the Torah has a din, which is min ha-Torah, but nonetheless creates a space for Chazal to define it. And if that's the case, so ultimately, the din presumably is still going to be Dereis at the end of the day. And that's a unique kind of thing. Reb David Cohen, in the beginning of his essay, so he notes that the Prima Gadim in his Hakdama, he lists off different categories of Yisurim, Dereis, and Derabanan. So if he doesn't list this category, how come he leaves out this category? So it's a good question. Maybe the answer could be is that maybe there's another way to look at it. That maybe it's not a new category. Maybe it's just a phrase the Gemara is using here to say that it's a din d'rabbanan. And just like Chachamim overall, so they look to the Torah and they try to figure out where do they need to step in? Like we spoke about a little bit, where do they need to make a siag? Where do they need to expand something? Where do they need to account for human weakness? So they made dinim based on that, and sometimes they have asmachtas, and the whole discussion as to what the authority of an asmachta is. But maybe that's all it means, that there's a certain space here that Chazal picked up on. And they realize that this is an appropriate area to make a din d'rabbanan. And they did so. So at the end of the day, it's a din d'rabbanan. So maybe it's not listed in the Prima Gadim because maybe it's not a special category. It's just a way of saying that here's a din d'rabbanan and maybe there's an asmachta, like we find throughout Shas. Chazal saw an indication from the Psukim that this would make sense, but ultimately it's on their initiative. Ultimately it is a din d'rabbanan like every other din d'rabbanan. So, Zach, to your question, basically just to spell it out, is that maybe the question is, so if it's a din d'rabbanan, so okay, so then we have kulas because of the system of suffix d'rabbanan l'kula and the like, and the general policy of kulas by dinim d'rabbanan. But if it's a din d'araisa, so then the kulos are not automatic. That the kulos maybe exist because Chazal perceived that to be conceptually linked to whatever they were asked to do. But you wouldn't necessarily, for example, say suffik d'rabbanan l'kula. It would mean that Chazal perceived the Isser in a certain way, which yields a kula. But not that the din is inherently less chomer, it's still a din d'araisa. So to give an example to illustrate this, so the Ran in Yuma that we said before, who explains why there are exceptions to Rechitza, so he says because of Masar HaKas of L'Chachamim, but then he also poses the question, says, why is it that if these dinim are min haTorah, which is his understanding of what still is the case there, so how come parents are allowed to supply these inuyim or these tanugim for children. Normally, you're not allowed to feed your child non-kosher food. How come you're allowed to bathe your child on Yom Kippur? And he leaves it as a question. So the later Svarim, they don't understand, why is it a question? He just answered it himself. Right? He just said, it's Masar Kasav L'Chachamim, and he said that that explains the coolest that he was talking about. So it explains this also. And indeed, that's what Kesef Mishnah, it keeps coming up here, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, that's how he explains it, that because Masar Kasav L'Chachamim, so therefore, that's why we can be Mekel on feeding Ketanim. Not feeding per se, but let's say on bathing Ketanim. Feeding is a different story. So, what's the issue here? Why doesn't the Ran himself say like that? So, it could be, and I saw a discussion about this in an article was written by Rav Sofer, it was Rav Aaron Sofer, that it seems like what the Ran is saying is that the reason Chazal were Mekel for the Melech and for the Kala is because they understood that that was categorically a different type of activity. And therefore, they defined the Inui of Rechitz in such a way that it didn't include that. But it doesn't allow kulas across the board. It just means when it's conceptually relevant, then they were Mekel and they made that exception. But when it comes to Ketanim, it's basically the same action. So therefore, that doesn't fit into this point. And that author, he says, in the Kesef Mishnah, disagrees. He probably understood it differently, that maybe for a Ketan it is fundamentally different. But based on what we're saying, we could say that, no, the Kesef Mishnah disagreed because the Kesef Mishnah saw it as a Din D'Rabbanan. And basically saying that they could be Mekel because of that and apply Drabbanan policies overall. While maybe the Ran is basically saying it's a Daraisa, just Chazal fit the parameters, so therefore it's not within their Rishos to make that distinction. That's why I had to leave it as a question. Okay, so far so good? Makes sense? More, it's complicated material. So this then we could then take to another level. Okay, so this we understand so far. Right, what have we seen? So we've seen that there's this apparently this concept of Masar Kasav L'Chachamim, which pops up in a number of concepts, starting from Meleches Chol HaMoed, a machlokes, whether that creates a din d'Oraisa or a din d'Rabbanan. And we took that a step further to say, basically, the question is, what do the words mean? Does it mean that Chazal were asked to determine the details? Or does it mean that, no, doesn't really differ from Dinim D'Rabbanan overall? It's just the Gemara is telling us in different language, the same idea we find elsewhere, that Chazal saw there was a space here, there was an invitation to come make a Din D'Rabbanan. So, if you say the first way, the more Mechudish way, that it's a din min ha-Torah, but the rabbis determine the rules. So, why are there these exceptions? Why are there these unusual dinim? Right, normally we have dinim d'Oraisa, no problem. And then you have dinim d'Rabbanan, where the rabbis added on where they felt necessary. Why have a hybrid like this? Where a few scattered examples, you need to have a half and half D'Oraisa structure where the rabbis made the details. So presumably I have to say that there are different kinds of dinim D'Oraisa. That there are some dinim in HaTorah where the Torah is concerned about a certain activity, either that you should do this activity or you shouldn't do this activity, but the Torah is interested in a specific activity in and of itself. While in these concepts, where you find Masar Kasav L'Chachamim, it's more of a broad idea rather than a specific action the Torah is focused on. There's some kind of a goal the Torah is interested in. And the details of bringing about that goal could possibly differ. And Chazal were tasked with figuring out what exactly should be the manifestation of that goal. So, l'mashal, let's say melacha on Shabbos and melacha on Chol HaMoed. So when it comes to melachos on Shabbos, the Torah doesn't want certain actions happening. Those actions are in and of themselves problematic. When it comes to melachos Chol HaMoed, so there, it's not that any activity specifically is a problem from the Torah's perspective. It's something more general, that the Torah doesn't want us involved in other activities in order to preserve our attention to the Yontif. But there isn't any one action which is inherently offensive to Chol HaMoed. It's that the goal is that we should be free to enjoy Yontif on Chol HaMoed. And because that's the nature of the Isser, so Chazal were given the room to determine what would interfere and what wouldn't interfere. And if you got a chance to see the Ritva was probably at the bottom of the list, worth seeing, Ritva and Moed Katan and Daf Yud Gimel. So there, the Ritva essentially explains Melachos Chol HaMoed in that way. That the nature is we want to be able to focus on the Simchas HaMoed. So Chazal had to figure out exactly what will keep us focused most. On the one hand, we don't want to do other activities that will take us away from Simchas HaChag. However, if we're going to lose a lot of money because of that, or it's going to cause great hardship, so that's going to take us away from Simchas HaChag. So sometimes doing Malacha will take us away from Simchas HaChag, and sometimes not doing Malacha will take us away from Simchas HaChag. So since the goal was to preserve our focus on enjoying the Yontif, so Chazal had to make the determination, how exactly do we get to that goal? Sometimes it's this way, sometimes it's that way. So because the nature is such, so that's why we get such a unusual kind of formulation. And if you look at the Karen Ora, we mentioned before in interpreting the Rambam, the Karen Ora in the beginning of Moed Katan, he has a similar kind of perspective, that that's the nature of the Isser. And he kind of uses the language also, he says there is no etza, something like that, there's no etza malacha that is prohibited on a Chol HaMoed. It's not like there's any specific activity that the Torah didn't want. It's the result of being involved in such things. And therefore, Chazal were able to determine what will bring about the best result, even though the message is still a message min HaTorah. And that's essentially how he understands it. So presumably, that is applicable also to the ideas that the Rishonim bring in. And it's probably also, say, Inui and Yom Kippur, probably a similar kind of thing. Achil and Shtia is its own kind of category. But the other Inuyim, so probably that's also what the Ran was getting at, that the Torah just wants us to be in a state of non-Tainug, and Chazal were able to determine what's in that category and what isn't. And when it gets to Lulav, so it's probably along those lines also, especially because we focus on Hadar. So the Rush's application, he saw, is a little different than the Ran. Right? The Ran said how Hadar applies half here and half there, some to the first day, some to all the days. That's because it's Masr HaKas of the Chachamim, and the rabbis modeled it after that kind of undefined message in the Torah, and they had latitude to do that. But the Chacham Tzvi has a tshuva where he says, okay, the Ran I understand, but the Rush I don't understand, because to say that, well, you can make a brach on a luva yavish b'shas ha'atchak, because Masr HaKas of the Chachamim. So what does that mean? So how did they get the Rishus to allow something that wouldn't otherwise be allowed? said the Gemara in Chagiga when it brings it up, it's because there's a contradiction in Psukim. It sounds like we don't know how to read the Psukim. So Chazal were given the authority to determine what the balance is and what the Hachra is, what the resolution is. But here, Torah says Hadar. So how does the Rosh have the right to say that you can make a bracha on a lulav hayavish because of that? How did the Rosh understand the Chachamim to have that right? So the Ran, I get it, okay, because Chasser is a little bit, it's still a little bit Hadar when it's Chasser, so okay, so that's not a direct contradiction, so that's what the Ran was saying. Where does the Rosh come from? So the Korban Nisanel responds to the Rosh, and there's an interesting tshuva about this in the Dvar Yeshua. He tries to understand what the Rosh is getting at also, and he says that he brings in another interesting example. He brings in Imuki Yosef in Yevamos. Says when the Chazal were able to be mekel in allowing an aguna to remarry, a classical aguna's husband is missing. So the Gemara says they were able to be mekel on the testimony of one aid. So the Imuki Yosef has a comment there that essentially what the Torah wants is just strong proof. So that's the goal. So Chazal had the latitude to decide when they could rely on different standards of proof in order to bring about that reality. So he compares it here also. He says that's what the Rosh means. Okay, they were able to decide what is Hadar. But he still thinks it's a little hard to understand because if Yavesh is completely drained of Hidr, so then how could they call that Hadar? It does seem like it's contradicting the pasuk. So he leaves it on that point, but presumably what's relevant here is an Ar Samech who makes this comment also, that the point is Hadar is subjective b'chlal. Hadar is all going to be how it hits you. So therefore, that's presumably what's at play here, that since the Torah doesn't necessarily have a specific look in lieu of an esrog that it's trying to get, but it wants to evoke a reaction of Hadar. So therefore, that's one of these kinds of things, like the Malacha of Chol HaMoed, and like Inuv Yom Kippur, perhaps, maybe they all fit in this category, that Chazal can determine what is considered to be Hadar. And then, maybe also, maybe what the Rosh is getting at, is if you only have one Lulav, so then the whole notion of relative Hadar is going to be itself redefined. If there was a better one available, then okay, so this is not Hadar, and then we could say even b'di'evit it's no good. But if there isn't any other one around, so then it's a relative concept to begin with. So therefore, we have to take a different attitude, perhaps. So it's a complex topic, but I think this gives us a little bit of a framework to understand. There's more to say about this, and really it's a very complex and involved sugya. Reb Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva also in Chelek Aleph, where he talks about this rush, and he suggests that the idea of the rush's language, where he says that b'di'evet is no good if there are other options, is because part of the Masor HaKos of the Chachamim is they wanted us to be Zoyer in mitzvos. So Reb Moshe understood that it was talking about mitzvos overall, and that not the mitzvah of lulav, but mitzvos overall, and that in general we have a concept of zekeli v'anvei. We should do mitzvos in a beautiful way all the time. But because there's one that's singled out in the Torah, the language of Hadar, so that's supposed to teach us about the attitude of Hadar overall. So therefore, there's a greater kpeid on Hidr within the Lulav and Esrog as a lesson that overall, for mitzvos, we should try to have an attitude of Hidr. And therefore, there's a greater kpeid. But it's all a part of the general attitude of Hidda that we're supposed to have. So maybe that's also a part of how Chachamim were given latitude in order to convey that message. And that's part of the role of Yontif. Also, Yontif is a time when we are able to focus on certain themes with greater intensity, and supposed to give us a framework for the whole year round. So we always are looking to do things behider. And the mitzvah of Lulav, that Lulav and Esrog, where you have this extra focus on Hadar, so that gives us a jolt to pay more attention to the whole concept. And Chazal were involved in determining just how much that should guide our decisions. Okay, so just to maybe quickly recap the main points. So we saw that the Gemara, it says, Meleches Chalamoid, we all perceive already there's something unusual about it. We know there's an Isser, but we don't understand exactly where it comes from or what the rules are. The Gemara says that it's Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim, and the Rishonim, a lot of the Rishonim explain that that seems to be answering a question, how it could be that we have kulos by chalamoed malacha that don't seem to fit with the din daraisa. So that's the answer. Okay, so but practically what does that mean? Does that mean it's daraisa or derabanan? So it seems to be a big machlokas Rishonim. If you want to zero in on that example of malachas chalamoed, we see it coming up in a few other cases also. And we mentioned a few other examples of Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim in the Rishonim, the Ran specifically by Shari Nuyim on Yom Kippur, and the Rush and the Ran in different formulations related to the Psul Hadar of Elulav. And this question of whether it's Daraisa or Darabanan, so Rav Shechter understood this is all about what is the concept of Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim mean. And then we took that a little bit further to ask, essentially, what do the words mean? Do the words mean it's a din min haTorah the rabbis were asked to define? And if that's the case, then there really shouldn't be an attitude of kula like you would have by derabbanans. It should be only kulas that make sense because of how they conceptualize the din. Or is it, no, that really this isn't a new idea to address Rav David Cohen's question, how can the Prima Gadim doesn't list it? It's really a din derabanan, and all the Gemara means is that this is a case where Chazal saw a space that they should step in and do something. And in which case, it would be a din derabanan and would have a general kulos that you would find by Dinim Darabanan as a whole. And then we ask the question, if it is the more Mechudish version, so why do we have some Dinim all of a sudden in this unusual category? Why is it that normally we have Daraisas, Darabanans, and here we have a hybrid? So we suggested that most of the Dinim Daraisa, there's a focus on a certain activity, should happen or shouldn't happen. And here, these are concepts where it's not about an activity, it's about our result. And that seems to be the case when it comes to Meleches Chalamoed, and we saw that the Ritva and the Karen Ora seem to take that approach, that to different degrees of explicitness, but that it's not that there's any Melacha that Torah specifically doesn't want us to do on Chalamoed, it's that we want to be available for the Yontif, and Melacha could take us away from that. But on the other hand, as Ritva says, sometimes not doing Melacha will take us away if we're so farhitzed about the Davar HaAvod. So it's that kind of an idea. And that seems also to be the case when it comes to things like Inui on Yom Kippur outside of Echil and Shtia, and also Hadar on Sukkot and Lulav and Esrog. Maybe these are all ideas which fit this model, that they're more broader concepts rather than specific actions, and therefore the Torah says this is what we're going for, and Chazal, you determine what's going to bring about that kind of a attitude in each case. And then we just added that Rav Moshe understood this comment of the Rush about that normally there's a kpeda on Hadar if there's another option. It's a kpeda even b'di'evit, so we should be zoyer in mitzvos, that it's not about this mitzvah, about mitzvos overall, that really Hidr is something that is applicable to all things, to all mitzvos, but the Torah made us pay even more attention by giving us a mitzvah where Hadar is built into it in a more prominent way, and therefore Chazal understood that that's also what should be the takeaway of what we do with it. So indeed, that should help us through Yontif also, that Yontif is a time when we're allowed to focus more on certain values than we can during the year, but they're relevant all year round, and hopefully we can take this opportunity to focus on these themes and have them inform the experience of the entire year. All right, well, I thank you guys for joining us tonight, and look forward to seeing you next week when we resume. And I wish you all a healthy and safe and uplifting and elevated last days of Yontif, and we should be able to all share from our different locations a true Simchas HaTorah and Simchas Torah. And before that, I'll say Kasha Lai Pradaschem. It's hard to leave with Fishmini Atzeres, but we'll do it anyway. So I will wish you a good night. I wish you a Gemar Tov. You should have a good Kapara on Hashanah Rabbah. And I look forward to seeing you soon. Yeah, Shukar. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you for arranging this.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.